The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hysteria is brought to you by Quince. You know, every Father's Day gift guide I see is kind of boring, right? It's like socks, grill tools, get your dad a lawnmower, get your husband a lawn. And it's like, we can do better. Thankfully, Quince makes buying a thoughtful Father's Day gift easy. Quince has all the pieces dads actually want to wear, like organic cotton silk polos, European linen beach shorts, and comfortable pants that work for everything from weekend hangouts to nice dinners.
The best part? Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than you'd find at similar brands. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the crazy prices. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
Alyssa, do you want to know what happened to me just literally days ago?
What?
I come home and there's a package on my porch from Quince. Okay. And I'm like, oh, did Quince send me something? No, the package is addressed to my husband. I go in and I'm like, did you order something from Quince? And he was like, yes, I did. And I was like, you know, they're a sponsor of my show. We could probably use our promotional code to get you something. And he goes, oh, no, I just went on my own and I bought something. He bought pants. They look really nice, but he didn't use it. He just on his own. He never buys clothes. All of his shirts, he's going to get mad at me for saying this, but he rarely buys clothes for himself because he doesn't like having too much stuff. But Quince makes really nice, stylish, sharp-looking, well-made clothing that is versatile and is within a price range that does not make my husband break out in hives.
Wait,
and
it's
he gets it himself. That's how much he likes it.
No, I have the funniest true story.
Okay, tell me.
You just telling that story. So at Quince, the Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater is back.
Ooh.
And I had always wanted it in butter. So I ordered it like 3 days ago for myself in butter. It should be here soon. Aaron, I totally forgot to use our code.
I know. You know what? I do need to like re-up my summer clothes big time. So I'm going to make sure my husband is taken care of and that I'm taken care of. As soon as we're done recording, I am going to go check out Quince. For the dad who deserves better than basic, Quince has you covered. Go to quince.com/hysteriapod for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/hysteriapod to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/hysteriapod. Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, this week NBC News reported that Trump administration officials, led by Tulsi Gabbard, have mulled turning the president's daily briefings, daily intelligence briefings, into Fox News-style like video segments.
It's unbelievable.
The president hates reading. And so he's only been to like 14 intelligence briefings since he re-entered office in January, which is not many compared to how many days there have been.
I think Obama had done like 55 at this point.
Yeah.
In person.
Actually, I think Trump one had done 55 at this point. Like he is like reading even less than he was reading in 2017.
He's got senioritis.
Yeah, he really does in more ways than one. Okay, so my question is a two-parter, Alyssa.
Yeah.
If the president is skipping most of his daily intelligence briefings, then who is driving the country?
Well, Erin, I think we all know it's Houthi PC small group chat.
Oh, God.
And I'm not sure they're reading the briefings either, but I know they're getting a lot done on that WhatsApp.
Yeah, no, they're
Signal,
doing a lot
whatever of, they're using now.
They're doing a lot of Signal, the Signal clone that got hacked, that one.
Yeah, that one.
I'm sure we'll find out what they're talking about sooner or later when it's in the New York Times or the Washington Post.
The Atlantic.
The second part of the question, if you were going to get daily intelligence briefings in some kind of video format,
yeah,
how would you prefer them presented to you?
Oh, Aaron, I would love, if I were president and I needed my intel briefing, I'd love it in a get ready with me format.
Get ready with me as I talk about the situation in
We're
Ukraine.
Starting off in the Maghreb and we're going to head over to Europe, but get ready with me.
We've got a fun show today, Alyssa, wouldn't you say? We get to talk about many of our favorite topics.
All corners of the universe.
All corners of the universe. First of all, we got to, you know, look. If you're going to have dessert, you got to eat your vegetables. And the vegetables right. in this show are we're talking about Trump's big, beautiful bill and some of
which
the,
is not which is, beautiful.
It's garbage. It's the Dumb. Only it's the only fat thing that Trump would call beautiful that isn't himself. And then we talk about the Trump administration rescinding Biden era guidance on EMTALA, which sounds like a lot of information. It's basically the guidance that said emergency rooms need to treat pregnant patients who need abortions for emergency reasons. Trump administration is like, no, you don't.
Actually,
you don't. Actually, you don't. And then we have a conversation about modesty, the new modesty movement. Is it something welcome for people who don't want to show off all their skin all the time?
Maybe.
Or is it something darker?
Possibly.
But here's what it definitely is. An excuse for Alyssa Mastromonaco to talk about sister wives.
I love it. You can't stop me.
And then we have, as always, Sani Petty. It's a great show. Excited for you to listen. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that's celebrating Pride Month by agreeing that the gay nun played by Rosie O'Donnell is the least cringy love interest in season 3, episode 1 of And Just Like That.
Hands down.
And it's so funny because she's written to be cringe. She's written to be cringe.
I'm like judging Miranda. I'm like, who are you, like a superpower lesbian now that you can be like judgy with poor earnest nun who wants to just like experience this once in her life?
Right.
I was on Rosie's side.
Completely team sister. What do they call her? Sister Mary Tourist?
Sister Mary Virgin. Sister Virgin Mary.
And
Tourist.
Sister yes. Mary Tourist.
Yeah.
I thought that they were trying to make fun. I mean, I get it. They were like dunking on things that tourists like to do in New York. Sad they didn't get more into 9/11 jokes because I feel like that's the number one thing tourists do in New York is like go to the 9/11 memorial and buy souvenirs.
They do. I do go to the 9/11 memorial every morning when I'm in the city.
Well, I mean, if it's on your way.
And I'm not like, a tourist.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I thought that show really debuting so close to the beginning of Pride Month as a straight woman has really driven home the fact that being a straight woman is embarrassing. It is embarrassing. It is like, just like, it is a series of like, awkward and like the Aiden scene is just like
horrible.
Carrie, you don't need him. You don't need anybody.
You've got that whole house. You don't need anybody but Shu the cat.
Yeah, although I sent some foreshadowing that Shu escapes.
Okay, so we can get this was part of my Sani Petty this week, so we can dig in even deeper.
We can dig in even let's put a pin in And Just Like That. And move past the bread and circuses and into what the bread and circuses are distracting from.
Yikes.
I'm sorry. I just wrote that segue in my brain, and as I was saying it, I was like, this is stupid. But whatever.
No, it's not stupid.
Well, thank you. That's really nice of you to say. Okay. So on Tuesday, there was some late-breaking news before we recorded. The Trump administration has rescinded the Biden-era guidance on EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, which requires hospitals that participate in Medicaid to stabilize a patient in emergency condition. So that sounds like, okay, well, like, why would the Trump administration rescind that guidance?
Oh, we know
well,
why.
Because after Roe v. Wade was overturned, Biden added guidance to it that clarified that hospitals have an obligation to provide abortion care to pregnant patients if needed in states that have abortion bans and in states that don't have abortion bans. So no matter where you are in the country, if you're a pregnant person and you go to the hospital and an abortion is necessary to stabilize you for transport to another facility than the hospital needs to provide it. The Biden administration did that. On Tuesday, Trump rescinded that guidance. The go-ahead-and-die guidance, I guess we'll call it. Now hospitals will be instructed to preserve the life of the unborn child. Dr. Jamila Parrott, an OBGYN president of the Physicians for Reproductive Health, she said in a statement that complying with this law can mean the difference between life and death for pregnant people, forcing providers like me to choose between caring for someone in their time of need and turning my back on them to comply with cruel and dangerous laws. Alyssa, according to The Guardian, five women have reportedly died after having their care denied or delayed and being unable to access legal abortions. So, Alyssa, how is this pro-life?
It's not. It's not even remotely pro-life. And it's like, and imagine that these are the five women we know about. Mm-hmm. You know, knowing about them relies on their partner or a family member coming forward and explaining how and why they died.
Mm-hmm. I think it also relies on, like, the providers being kind of straightforward with the patient's family. Because there is I hate to say this, and I'm probably there's a better word for it, but there's probably a way that providers try to finesse a preventable death when they're talking to a family member who is distraught.
Right.
And I'd imagine that there are probably ways that hospitals and providers would attempt to, like, sidestep responsibility mm-hmm. for deaths that could have been prevented if they weren't trying to comply with draconian laws.
Mm-hmm.
How can we keep track of these things if, like, there are pregnant people who are, like, dying or family members who really just don't want to be dragged into the public eye to tell this story and relive their trauma over and over
I have
again.
No idea. Like, that's the whole point, right? How can you keep track? I mean, we know of the five because their families made their stories public, because local media picked up the stories, which we're, like, very reliant on local media right now for reporting on some of this stuff when it's not really incentivized. And it's up to people like you and me to make sure that if we find out about it, we talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and here's something that I've seen, and it's really frustrating because I think it's bad faith. But I see people kind of on the right saying, like, well, what rights have been taken away from you? Name a right that's been taken away from you. What bad thing has happened? I mean, we can cite specific examples of like, specifically, there were two women in Texas who went to the ER to seek treatment for ectopic pregnancies and mm-hmm. were had their care delayed, and both of them lost one of their fallopian tubes as a result. So they lived to talk about it. And because their care was delayed, despite the EMTALA guidance under the Biden administration, they were able to complain to the federal government about the hospital. So there was a mechanism for these women in Texas to hold the hospital accountable when they kind of ignored federal guidance in favor of, like, following the scariest imagined version of the mm-hmm. state law, which is what hospitals do. And so, like, that's happening. It's not just people are dying. You know, I mean, there are five people that we know of who died. Mm-hmm. But there are how many countless others who had their care delayed, who lost fallopian tubes, who lost
totally, fertility? Right? Like, that's the difference between saving someone's life and their health being at risk,
mm-hmm.
right? You go into the hospital and your health is at risk. You have an ectopic pregnancy. You have a pregnancy that is self-terminating. And you, by Trump's standard, need to be dying. If the doctor says, if we get in there now, we can save your uterus. We can save this. That's not on the table. It's not mm-hmm. on the table. You need to be, according to Trump, in full sepsis and about to die for the doctor to then not be liable to be put in prison in some states for giving you health care.
And fined, like, I think in Texas, the fine is like $100,000.
It's ridiculous.
You can have your medical license revoked. You can get thrown in prison. And it's like, if you're a doctor, I know doctors want to care for patients and they want to help people get better. Like, the fact that sometimes people don't get better or people die causes doctors to experience burnout.
Yeah, of course.
Causes healthcare professionals to experience burnout and, like, severe mental health consequences when they're trying to do something and they can't do the thing that they are driven to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's such a awful situation. And I also think that it's, like, it's red meat for the anti-choice crowd. Because so far, Donald Trump really hasn't. I mean, like, right now, the anti-abortion movement is in, like, a state of disarray in the mm-hmm. country, to be totally honest. They're the dog that caught the car, and now they're trying to decide if they're going to maul the driver of the car or if they're just going to go, like, lick their ball sack to torture that metaphor. But, like, they're very splintered. They don't have a singular goal, and pulling back this EMTALA guidance is something that I think a lot of people on the anti-abortion side can agree is something that they wanted. So it's like something that Trump can be like, okay, here you go. I don't think he really cares about abortion either way. I really don't.
No, I think you're right. I totally think you're right. This was a gimme for them.
Yeah. But, you know, in the meantime, you know, the anti-abortion movement right now is so disorganized. And I think that it's really important for us as we're sort of like figuring out a way forward to remember that, like, yeah, like 2024 was a disaster in terms of like the result of the election, but abortion is still a winning issue.
Yep.
And the more we can get Republicans to talk about it and the more we can get Republicans to engage on it, the more we can point out how harmful anti-abortion policies are and the more we can drive home to voters and people who maybe don't think about it as much until it directly affects them, that it could be you. Like, this could be you.
Could be you. And abortion era, not just popular in 2024, popular in dark red states.
Mm-hmm. Popular everywhere. So maybe let's not forget about it, because rescinding the EMTALA guidance of the Biden administration was just cruel and stupid. But that's, I think, a good way to describe this this administration. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Alyssa, in my world, the only person worthy of the term big, beautiful Bill is NBA legend Bill Russell, or maybe Bill Walton.
Oh, give me Bill Walton. Give me my Celtic deadhead.
I mean, let's talk about the big, beautiful Bill.
Oh, the big, beautiful Bill, as Trump likes to call it, and now Mike Johnson likes to call it.
It's so gross coming out of Mike Johnson.
It's so gross. It's better. I like Elon's version better, big, disgusting Bill, or whatever he calls it. Yeah. It passed in the House last month. Because this is a reconciliation bill, Senate Republicans only need a simple majority to pass it. However, there are already signs that some may defect from the party, mostly due to concerns about the budget deficit, and Republicans can only afford to lose 3 votes. The thing about this beautiful bill is that it is big, so we know some threads are getting lost in the shuffle with news coverage. Here are some of the parts we wanted to highlight that could have major consequences on women and families. Oh, Aaron, here we go. Down the work requirement rabbit hole. Medicaid. According to KFF, the bill would reduce federal Medicaid spending by $723 billion and increase the number of uninsured people by 7.6 million. It would also prohibit Medicaid from covering care for non-abortion services provided by Planned Parenthood clinics, which is
why
fucking dumb.
Why?
What is the point?
That's just like,
where healthcare deserts get care.
It is existing healthcare infrastructure for people that are underserved. And it's not like, what the fuck? That's so stupid.
It's just cruel for the point of it. It would also limit gender-affirming care as essential care under the Affordable Care Act plans and would prohibit Medicaid from covering those treatments, not just for minors, but for adults as well. Okay, good for you.
Okay.
Child tax credit. Here we go. The bill would increase the child tax credit to $2,500 from 2000 through 2028. But there are provisions in the House version of the bill that require both children and parents to have a Social Security number, excluding families with mixed immigration status to access the benefit. The bill would also decrease the refundable portion of the credit to $1,400 per qualifying child, down from $1,700, which makes the credit less accessible to the lowest income families.
Okay, so the bill requires both children and parents to have a Social Security number, excluding families with mixed immigration status to access the benefit. Okay. Wouldn't this incentivize women women who have children with men who are undocumented or who have an immigration status that is in process, wouldn't that incentivize them to exclude them from the birth certificate of the child? Couldn't you just say the father was unknown? I mean,
of course.
Just saying, like—
No, yeah. All of this is just stupid.
Like, it's creating problems that don't need to exist by dismantling a system that is not perfect, but is better than the worst version that they're trying to replace it with. You know, like,
yeah.
Why would you, That's so stupid. And also, like, making it less affordable to lowest income families. I mean, that completely tracks with other Trump and Republican proposals for the child tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way the child tax credit worked, like, during COVID was that it was issued in portions as, like, a payment. And people who were below the threshold of people who pay taxes were eligible for it. So they got it in the form of essentially payments.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Republican plans make it so that if you are so low income that you don't pay taxes, then you don't get any, it doesn't like benefit you at all.
Right.
So it's just like, those are the people that need it the most. Like, why aren't we giving them money? I don't understand. And here's another thing. Okay. That amount of money means a lot to people that are low income and means less the higher income you are. But I think it's clear that the natalists, the pronatalists and the mm-hmm. Trump administration want to incentivize higher income, wink, wink, white people to have more children. But higher income people are not going to be swayed to have more children but with like a $1,400 payment.
Totally.
It's like that's like a high-end car payment. You know, like,
right.
But like that is not that much money for somebody that's not enough money to be like, I'm on the fence about having a kid. Life altering decision going to cost me like $300,000 in the next 18 years. You know what? They're going to give me $1,400. I think I'll do it.
Seems like a plan. I'm in.
It's not. It just doesn't make sense. Like, you know. When I say economically speaking, I don't just mean money economics. I mean like decision-making economics. It doesn't make sense as a way to incentivize a decision that big. I don't know what they're doing. Like I'm trying to think of it from their perspective. Like, okay, so what they want to do is incentivize people who make more money to have more children,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
But this isn't enough money for it to make a difference. So it's not going to work for them. And then it's also punishing lower income people. So it's like, what's going on? What do you
think? Yeah, I don't know. Makes no sense.
Something else that was absolute shit is that parents with children under 18 are exempt from the working requirement to qualify for SNAP. But the House version of the bill lowers that age to 7 years old. So if you have a kid that is 8 or older and you're on SNAP, you will be required to work. The bill would also raise the age for aging out of work requirements from 55 to 65.
So first of all, this is an issue in search of a problem. 84% as of 2018, 84% of people who receive SNAP who are married, a married couple, work. People work.
Also child care.
You don't need to force work.
But providing child care is work. It is labor.
Well, and that's the point.
That is why a stay-at-home mom is like someone who they're working. They're not getting compensated.
No.
But they're working.
And the people who don't work, the people who are on SNAP who don't work, typically are not working because of disability or caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because people are home, lazy, just collecting their fucking SNAP.
Wouldn't it be convenient for people who oppose helping poor people if that were the case? But it's not. It's not.
No.
It's a fiction that has persevered because it's easier to cut when that fiction is, when you've imagined that fiction is the real thing. You know, I think that I don't understand why there isn't a program to actually pay people to take care of their own kids. And listen to me.
Let me hear.
Because there are some state programs. I know in the state of Wisconsin, I don't know if this still exists in the state of Wisconsin, but I know that if you have an older relative that is like on the cusp of needing to go to a long-term care facility, you can go take care of them and like log those hours with the state and get paid an hourly stipend to do it. So like rather than the state paying a home health aide to come in or paying for them to go to a long-term care facility or whatever, which is way more expensive and less comfortable for the person, they just pay the like family member to provide that care and those services.
Yes.
And that way the family member can afford to take time off work to do it because they're actually being compensated to provide the care. Why are we doing this with kids? I don't understand.
Like, it makes total sense.
I mean, they're just as helpless as a person who can't, like, they cannot do anything for themselves, and they need someone to take care of them. I don't understand why we don't do that. Probably because we're mean as a country. We're dumb and mean.
Dumb and mean.
Okay, so
it's very depressing.
It's super depressing. Also, Trump wants this on his desk by the 4th of July.
Not a chance. I think not a chance.
You think not a chance? Why do you think that?
Let me tell you why. Because people are getting angry. So I could be wrong, but so the Senate, they don't want to pass this. Even, like, they're all very nervous about this. And did you see Marjorie Taylor Greene's all up in the mix? Because girl came out and admitted she didn't read the bill. Mm-hmm. And on page, like, 279, she found out that there's a provision that says the federal government cannot regulate AI for the next 10 years.
For the next 10 years. And you know what? A broken clock. Because I'm with Marjorie.
And she's like, don't you take states, right? And she went nut and was like, if I, mea culpa, I didn't read it. If I did, I wouldn't have read the bill. I wouldn't have voted for the bill. So here's the interesting thing. I mean, look, I'm taking her at her word. Let's say I'm taking her at her word. Uh-huh. If the Senate passed the bill exactly as is and sent it back, no. Say they made little changes, right? Because then it would have to go back to the House and the House would have to vote on it again. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, the Freedom Caucus is like, we've been clucking like chickens that this is not a good bill. Uh-huh. So would she vote for it? Would it then not pass in the House? I think there's some drama cooking. Oh, and I'm here for it.
It is, yeah. And also Rand Paul, another broken clock.
Yeah.
That is right. He's like, guys, this is dumb. Ron Johnson, third dumbest senator.
Josh Hawley.
Yeah. They're all like, this isn't cool, guys.
Josh Hawley's like, this is really mean to poor people.
Josh Hawley is 100% running for president in 2028, and I'm fucking dreading it. No, not fine.
No,
not fine.
Let me tell you something.
If it
saves Medicaid right now, let him run. Don't care. Let him do what he's got to do.
Let him cluck out or whatever he's going to do. But yeah, I agree with Josh Hawley in this one
time.
Single instance, and I kind of love. See, here's the thing: Marjorie Taylor Greene, a dick. Rand Paul, total. We can all agree. A dick. Josh Hawley, a dick. But every once in a while, a dick stands up for you in a way that benefits you.
And you don't have to say thank you, but you can acknowledge it.
You could be like, thank you, dick, for this one time that your dickishness worked in my favor. It's really funny also to watch John Thune, who a lot of people that we like female senators that we like, also have enjoyed working with. I think Amy Klobuchar has worked with him on things.
Yeah.
Like he's one of those Republicans that, like, Democrats in the Senate are like, he's fine. You know, like,
he's
nobody's
fine.
Like, John Thune is a dick. Nobody.
Right. No.
People don't say that about him. But I'm going to be a little catty right now because he's the one that's got to, like, usher this through. And I saw a presser where he was talking about how he thought he could do it, whatever. That man has reached Boehner-esque levels of tan. There is not that much sun in South Dakota, my dude. There is not that much
sun. Not at this time of year, but also so gray. Like, look, I will say I feel like the job is aging him.
God, he is aging like an overripe peach, right? He's like fuzzy and gray and also very, very orange. I don't understand. Like, poor John Thune. Not really poor John Thune because
I feel like he's trying. I feel like, look, he is the best option that we had on the Republican Senate to be leader.
Right. It's like saying, yeah, he's the best of some bad choices. Do you think Medicaid could or should be more effectively reformed than?
Sure.
Like, what would you do if you had to, like, write your own small?
Well, Aaron, I am not a policy person, but I would say that it appears that the use of technology could really help streamline some things. Like, let's get telemedicine. Let's get records being more easily retrieved, things that doctors can pull up. You know, it's like, it feels to me that the Medicaid system is quite antiquated and that if they brought it, if Elon Musk had actually used all of his tech bros for something, they could have gone in and maybe just made a much more streamlined, like, system so that people also, let's get some better communication, some transparency, some more, like, some more preventative screenings. I think what is such a huge problem with Medicaid is it is such a difficult system for people to use that by the time they're actually seen, they are much sicker than they were, which is much more expensive to treat than mm-hmm. when they initially tried finding help for themselves. Mm-hmm. So I think making it more accessible, making it more modern, I think all of these things would help both people get better service and the costs come down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that kind of brings me to a point that I wanted to bring up, and I'm sure we'll hit on this again. There was a, and that's like the unpopularity of a lot of things in this bill. Mm-hmm. Like most Americans, if you were like, hey, do you think that the government should be legally not allowed to regulate AI for 10 years? Most Americans would be like, no, I don't like that at all. Like, and, you know, do we want to see big cuts to healthcare and mm-hmm. do we want to see cuts to Social Security? Do we want to see tax breaks to the 1%? And do we want to increase the deficit by like an eye watering amount of money?
Right.
Like, no, like there people were saying when they were before they voted for Trump, which I don't believe these people at their word, but let's just say we can take sure. them at their word. They said they're voting on him for him because of the economy. Mm-hmm. They're worried about the deficit. They wanted mm-hmm. to cut they were excited about Elon Musk joining the administration because they wanted to cut waste, but actually they've spent more money with, you know, what is happening is we're not cutting waste.
No, nope.
We're not spending less money.
Nope.
We are cutting these programs, and these things are pretty unpopular. And yet we are finding over and over again, I think like once a week, there's a feature with like a pull quote that everybody passes around where it's like, the leopards ate my face, you know,
right.
where it's like people who are facing the consequences of their vote in a way that with like a complete like befuddlement, like they cannot believe that the thing that they voted for is happening to them. Like, mm-hmm. it's crazy. The latest one was a New York Times feature on a small town in Missouri where 80% of the population voted for Trump. But then a beloved community member named Carol was taken into ICE custody because
yep.
when she came over from Hong Kong decades ago, she didn't maintain the proper documentation. She was a mom. She had kids. You know, she was an active member of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody in the article was quoted as, we didn't think they would be, I didn't vote for them to deport moms or something like that.
No, they said criminal. We voted for him to deport criminals not
yeah,
moms.
Not moms. But the thing is, like, you did. You know, you did. And something tells me that even though one of their favorite moms was just taken into ICE custody mm-hmm. in a way that was upsetting to members of the community, something tells me that 80% of that town is still going to vote red next time around.
Probably.
Why do you think that's the case? Why do you and I like kind of have the same inkling of why that's the case?
No, why do you think it's
okay?
The case?
So here, I mean, because I think like you and I are both kind of circling something. So I think that Democrats who are like, these are who we got to win back. These are the voters
oh, yeah,
we're going to win
no.
back. I don't think they're winnable. I think that they'll vote for Trump 80% or whoever is the Trumpiest by like massive margins again. And I think it's because Donald Trump has successfully transformed political support into a sort of fandom, like cheering for a team.
100%.
And like trying to convince – for Democrats being like, ooh, we can win these guys back is like – if a bunch of Ravens fans went to Pittsburgh and they were like, we're going to win some of these Steelers fans because it looks like the team
no.
isn't going to be good for a while. Like, no, you're not. They're fans. They're fans. They're not.
They're fans. They may take their jersey off. They may not go to games, but they're still fans.
Exactly.
And
so, like, they, what's the
people
strategy?
Get mad at their teams. People get mad at their teams. But sure. the minute their team wins a game,
they're back
they're
in
back.
The stadium.
And so I think here, look, I think that there are people, like what, best case scenario, I think there are people who voted for him, who for one reason or another may be disillusioned and then may not go out to vote in 2024, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think that's like the best case scenario. I don't think that a lot of people, you know, who are upset on the behalf of Carol in Missouri are going to go vote for a Democrat in mm-hmm. 2024 or 2020. I don't think that that's the case. And I also think that the way these stories happen, like, yes, this is sad, they will have forgotten about Carol by then.
Mm-hmm. Right. Carol was a small price to pay.
Right. It's like, we're sorry, Carol.
Yeah.
We'll set up a GoFundMe for you, Carol.
So it's not necessarily.
I'm not laughing. I'm sorry for Carol.
I feel bad for Carol, too. I feel like I'm laughing because I'm mad. I don't want to, like, live in my anger right now. And so I'm deflecting it with humor, which is a thing a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. I think, to go with the team analogy, mm-hmm. I don't think that these people are, like, going to come over to the new expansion team. Like, I think the Democrats that are trying to do that and people spending money on, like, snazzy ads that are like, look, she's a Air Force pilot who won a million awards, and now she wants to save America. And, like, she's running against a literal pile of slime with an R stamped on top of it. Like, we're not going to win those people, but I think the best thing we could do is discourage them. I hate to say it, but discourage them. Like, this isn't – you're cheering for the Astros, guys. It's not the good team. You guys are villains, and you don't have to, like, switch teams, but maybe, like, take off the jersey.
Just take off the jersey, okay? Yeah. Take your lawn sign down. I will say, up here, there's this one guy on a pretty big thoroughfare. We all call him Don Trump because he had a homemade sign that was not totally legible. Mm-hmm. But his sign is down, and it is the talk of the neighborhood. We're like, is Don Trump mad? What has happened?
Uh-oh.
But the thing is, the best he can do is take his sign down. Will he vote for, you know? And also, look, the one upside potentially to all this, Aaron, is that these people were just actually really, like, that they like the star quarterback who is Donald Trump, and that when he retires from the team, maybe they'll be like, nah, the team kind of sucks. That's mm-hmm. a potential upside in 2028.
Yeah. So in this analogy, he is the Tom Brady of the Republicans.
It's perfect.
And he is going to go down to Florida. He's going to fuck off to Florida. And then, I don't know, maybe become the governor, which would be – actually, it'd be very funny if Donald Trump
hilarious.
Went to Florida and ran for governor because he's just addicted to being in front of crowds and having people cheer for him, and he just wants to campaign forever. That's, like, such a good place for a president to retire and just, like, become –
And as governor, he could then not endorse Ron DeSantis, who wants to run for president, and it would be, like, the ultimate for him.
That'd be – okay. I do – after he's done being president, I would prefer him to fuck off forever.
Totally.
But this is one funny thing he could do where I would be like, okay, I'm tuning in. I want to
listen, we're in. Hook, line, and sinker, make it a reality show. We'll watch it.
Right. The real Mousewives of Orlando. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's the deal with the new modesty movement.
Hysteria is brought to you by Armor Colostrum. We live in an environment our biology was never designed for. EMFs, artificial light, seed oils, microplastics, endocrine disruptors, chronic stress. These modern assaults disrupt cellular signaling, negatively impacting gut health and accelerating aging. Armor Colostrum revives cellular signaling, bolstering our health from within to defend against everyday threats. Colostrum is nature's first whole food with over 400 bioactive nutrients that work at the cellular level to reactivate your body's innate capacity to regenerate and thrive. Ready to reclaim your health?
Here are some of the benefits of Armor Colostrum. Strengthened immunity. You can also fortify your gut health. You can combat bloating and feel lighter. Probiotics are touted as a gut health solution, but they only address one part of the four-part gut wall, and most products on the market are dead before they even reach your gut. Armor Colostrum naturally fortifies your entire gut wall system, optimizing your microbiome and strengthening the gut wall architecture, which guards against irritants that can trigger symptoms like bloating and constipation. It also strengthens your gut barrier to guard against chemicals and pollutants that can drive inflammation and slow down metabolism. Armor Colostrum helps enhance nutrient absorption, stabilize blood sugar levels, and modulate hormones like leptin that ignite your body's fat-burning capacity for your peak metabolic performance.
We worked out a special offer for our audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmora.com/hysteria or enter hysteria to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/hysteria.
And we're back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for progressives who still want to wear and gift nap dresses to each other.
Who doesn't like a nap dress in the mail?
I mean, I love a nap dress. You gave me a nap dress.
I know. I can't believe we didn't wear them today.
We should have. I mean.
That would have been funny.
That would have been really funny. It's just, I mean, like, I'm a
real. We had the original nap dresses, too.
We did. But before we
the
got
COVID,
like,
the COVID famous nap dress.
Nap dresses where everyone was like, I'm just going to lie down. That's like, I need something that I can lie down in. Yeah. Nap dresses. What a wonderful garment. But apparently they have some cultural baggage.
There's some strings.
Or strings attached to those cap sleeves. All right, Alyssa, let's talk about modesty.
All right. Erin, last summer, the conservative women's magazine, aptly named The Conservateur, suggested that its readers wear long hemlines, flat shoes, one-piece swimsuits, and sweaters in their summer Modest is Hottest wardrobe guide. There's nothing wrong with that in particular. And don't tattle on us if you see us rocking any of those looks this summer. Except for summer sweaters, because what? Actually, I love a summer sweater.
I love a summer sweater. I'll wear it until I'm like actually, like I will
Schwitzing.
Wear a sweater until I'm actually sweating. And I'm like, fine, I'll take it off. I'll garden in a sweater.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, why do I feel like I'm going to faint? Oh,
are we hottest and modest?
I don't know. I'm definitely not hottest. And it's not because I'm modest. It's just comfortable. But anyway. Continue on.
The problem is the explanation they provide for why dressing modestly is in. They wrote, since the sexual revolution, our culture has encouraged women to wear their sexuality on their sleeve. However, bearing it all leaves little to the imagination. Dressing modestly is far sexier. It's mysterious, chic, and exclusive.
Now, Alyssa, I've seen stuff about modesty in a lot of disparate places as well. And some of them are like religious, like with religious overtones that are overt. Some of them have sort of like religious overtone, like more subtle religious underpinnings. And then some of it is just people who are coming there from a completely secular and like nonpartisan place. Like, and so the overtly religious modesty movement I've seen is among like young tradcaths, and by tradcaths I mean like traditional Catholics,
the new converts
who are just like a little much. Like, as a cradle Catholic, I'm just gonna say you guys need to tone it down. But the tradcaths have gotten into some like pre-Vatican II fashion. They call it Marian modesty. Marian, like as in the Virgin Mary. Shout out to the Rosie O'Donnell reference from the first block of this show. Marian modesty required women attending Catholic Mass prior to Vatican II, which was a conference in the mid-last century that kind of reformed the way Mass was. Pre-Vatican II, women traditionally wore veils over their hair to attend
Catholic
Mass.
Yes. Right? Mantillas.
Yes. And they wore like sleeves that were at least to their elbows and skirts that were at least to their knees. And now if you like see nuns in their traditional like uniforms, habits.
Habits.
You see nuns in their habits. No nun habit is like more show-offy than that. They're all like Marian modesty. But it used to be that like that was the standard for church. And there's something really like chic about some of the way that the veils look. I think there's something very like old-fashioned and pretty about it. But Marian modesty is like big among traditional Catholics. And traditional Catholics, as we've discussed, are a menace. I'm saying that as a Catholic. The kind of like more subtle one is Mormons. Mormons have a very, it used to be a pretty strict standard of modesty because they wear things like called temple garments underneath their clothing. And the temple garments are issued to adults in the LDS church. They're like cap sleeve t-shirts, like scoop neck t-shirts and like shorts. They're not short shorts either. And basically
they're like Bermuda shorts.
Yeah, they're like Bermuda shorts. And like the guideline was all the clothing you wear should cover your garments. And that's like the standard for modesty. There are men's garments and women's garments. So like we weren't having men out here tarting it up in like tube tops. Or whatever. Now, shows like The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives kind of undermine that because those girls are not wearing their temple garments.
They are not modest.
And they are not dressing modestly. But that is something that is like a thing in the Mormon church. And since so many influencers are Mormon, and so many people that we see online, like driving style and culture right now are Mormon, that's kind of like driving some of the modesty culture because they were raised with that expectation. And then the third thing that I'm seeing, the secular modesty that isn't tied into the conservator style modesty thing, is the fact that I think that there are a lot of women who, when they go to a store to try to purchase, like, a bathing suit or, like, summer clothes or whatever, they go to the store and, like, 75% of it is, like, uncomfortably revealing for them. Like,
totally.
they don't want to wear, like, people don't want to wear, like, only crop tops. You know, like, there are a lot of people
stop cropping things.
People can rock a crop top, and good for you. There is no reason that that percentage of things available for women to wear should be cropped. There is no reason for that.
I agree.
And I think that there's, like, that is a secular, as an example of a secular truth. Oh, and then also, you know, I don't want to leave out, there's another religious tradition that it seems to be left out of this conversation because it's sort of, like, gone on at a pace for, you know, forever in the U.S., but is, like, observant Islamic women sometimes will choose to dress modestly or cover their hair. But that doesn't seem to be part of this modesty conversation in the U.S. Well, it is part of the modesty conversation in other parts of the world and in the world of fashion. We're talking specifically right now in the U.S. Okay, so here's the thing. Like, are you how do you feel, Alyssa, like, seeing all this modesty content? Like, are you happy about it or do you feel conflicted?
I feel conflicted because I think that, first of all, here's the thing that I think is so interesting is that in the conservator where they say dressing modestly is far sexier. Mm-hmm. So it's still about getting attention.
It's still about
right?
It's still about pleasing. It's still about man pleasing.
It's still about man pleasing. It's just doing it in a different way. So mm-hmm. I guess I'm not, like, so sure how I feel about, like, their definition of modesty. Mm-hmm. But in general, I mean, I have always been a very modest dresser. I have never worn a thong. I don't like things going up my butt. I rarely wear sleeveless. I mean, I have always just felt more comfortable with more on me. And weirdly, also, like, I run very hot. And I do find that it is easier for me to stay cool. Like, if I think of modest, when I think of, like, how I specifically dress, I would always think, like, well, in the summer, I probably wear less clothes than in the winter, right? Like, that kind of makes sense. But what I have found is that a nice 3/4 sleeve linen frock keeps me much cooler than something that is clinging to my body.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So for me, I have always been a modest dresser.
And you know, I just was thinking about that iconic article in New York Magazine from, like, 10 years ago that was like, get your body caftan ready for summer.
That's
and
me.
That just reminded me.
I am like full caftan. Like, yes, full caftan.
Well, I think you bring up a really important point. Like, the Conservator, which is the magazine with the modest is hottest feature, there are other women's magazines that are, like, for conservative women that have, like, a pro-modesty bent. But the Conservator is the one that's, I think, the most hardcore out of all. We're becoming, like, scholars of right-wing
women's magazine
media.
Has shipped, by the way.
Oh, good, good.
Yes.
We'll talk about that next week then because you'll be getting it soon and you will be.
I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. But the Conservator is the same magazine that threw a Make America Hot Again party earlier this year.
Right.
And there was, like, a bunch of pictures in, I think, the Washington Post, maybe the Washingtonian. There's a bunch of, like, party pics, you know, like, flashy. And people there were not dressed modestly, you know? And it sort of seems like
they were actually dressed a bit garishly.
They right, like, kind of express, like, it's the 8th grade dance. It's 1997, like, where we're in spaghetti straps. We're
spaghetti straps
nude
abounded.
Pumps with, like, an inch and a half platform that are we're still doing that. We've always been doing that. Okay. They were not dressed modestly. It feels like a kind of, like, modesty for thee, but not for me.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think it gives people the two-sided, you must be modest to be sexy directive that comes from, like, the politically conservative outlets that we've been talking about. It seems like a mechanism for women to either feel superior because they are showing more skin and getting more attention, or feel superior because they are showing less skin and they're being judgmental of other women who are choosing something else. I don't know. It feels like a mechanism for, like, shaming and judgment. And it's not necessarily empowering. Like when I was researching for this episode, I was reading about Iran and mm-hmm. the way that modesty is policed in Iran.
Sure.
And like in the 1930s, the leader of Iran outlawed headscarves. All mm-hmm. of a sudden, like this very traditional culture had like they were no longer allowed to wear headscarves. And then that flipped back after the revolution mm-hmm. and suddenly all these women had to cover up. And now there's like morality police in Iran go around like rounding women up and like it's so in Iran, it's not really about like women's freedom and expression. No. It's about like what the government has decided.
Control.
Yeah, it's about control. And I feel like the American conservative pro-modesty movement is actually about that too. I don't think it's about choice. I don't think it's about like, I would love to go to the store and see more clothing that is like comfort first. For women, that's like,
sure.
There is a way to be like comfortable and stylish and like have something cut in a flattering way. So it looks really nice on somebody's body, but it doesn't necessarily like cling or like dig in or show too much skin or like show too much cleavage. Like, I can't, there are certain outfits that I can't wear because I don't think that if I wore it, I could converse with people and not have them be distracted, you know, like,
and right.
So I think that there's one thing to be like, I wish that there was more ways for women to choose to be modest. And then this other, there's something that feels so dark about this current push for modesty, though.
Well, and also it's really about rich people, right? Like mm-hmm. the things that they are peddling are very expensive. The photo shoots and the Evie and the conservator, they are all, these are women wearing designer, layers of designer clothing, mm-hmm. right? They're not talking, they are not being inclusive. You know, they're not giving like the high low, like here's how you could do it with Gap. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does feel like it is aspirational to them mm-hmm. in an also socioeconomic way.
Oh, that's interesting. So like a lot of things in the current MAGA, MAHA movement, it is identifying an opportunity to shame or scare people into a new corner of the market that they have created and are ready to cash in.
100%. It's like these women are peddling. They are wearing Gucci. They are mm-hmm. wearing expensive designer clothing. They have very fancy handbags. They are dripping in jewelry. This is not like modest, like how Jesus was like, we don't need a lot of material goods.
Right.
You know? And they don't do the, you know, here is a, if you want to dress modest, here is a great t-shirt from Uniqlo or whatever. I mean, it's very high. Their modesty is very high end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Have you ever seen or heard modesty discussed in the context of like how men should be dressing?
Never.
Like little, not like little sluts with their short shorts. You haven't heard?
No.
No,
really? It's really funny. I have not been a party to conversations about men's short shorts. I feel like we all would prefer they get out of pleated khakis on occasion, but that's sort of where the conversation starts and ends, Erin, when we talk about men's clothing.
Right, because nobody's like, oh yeah, if a man wears like a cut-off t-shirt and he's got nice muscles, like that's gonna like distract women and they're not gonna be able to do their jobs. Like nobody's
Erin,
saying
no one is asking the Liver King to be modest.
No, I mean, I would prefer that he would put more clothes on. But you know what's really funny? Because I had that same thought, you know, as I was like preparing for this podcast, and I listened to a few like biblical Christian podcasts.
Oh, they were fun. I listened to, that was fun.
Yeah. I listened to a few, and I listened to one that was like, it was so interesting because it's like a Baptist podcast of like I don't know. I didn't read too much about like the background of it. It was like a pastor and his son and daughter-in-law, or like a married couple and like some kind of patriarch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear, there's a part of the podcast where you can hear the younger man who's married like realize that there's a double standard.
Yes,
point
yes.
it out. Like,
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, and he's like, so I guess like I've never really thought about like maybe I should cover up and not be distracting to women or like put on a shirt out of respect to them. And I'm like, wow, you know what? I do got to hand it to you. I got to hand it to you, buddy.
Because
it is like, you know, if we're talking modesty, if skin is distracting and nudity is distracting, which it can be in the wrong context, then like that's really actually – I think, like, thoughtful for a man to be like, oh, am I dressing in a way that's distracting given the context? But, yeah, We are going to take a quick break, but there will be more modesty talk in a moment. Stick around. Hysteria is brought to you by Article. Man, Article is just completely decking out my entire house at this point.
I saw your dining room chairs.
I got new dining room chairs. They are so pretty. And my old dining room chairs were also Article chairs. But these fit underneath the table a little bit better. And yeah. I think we're just going to scrub up the old Article
you
chairs.
You needed a refresh.
Needed a refresh. I also have my table is Article.
Yep.
My porch couch is Article. I have a family member who has an Article bed, an Article little chair for their kid. Like, we've got so much Article in my extended family that they can just, instead of doing like photographs on the website, they can just come to our house and take pictures of various pieces because it's probably Article. Article offers curated collections for every style, like mid-century modern, coastal, and Scandi-inspired pieces that not only shine on their own, but also pair seamlessly with nearly any other Article product.
Article takes great care in curating its collection, focusing solely on high-quality, meaningful pieces that will stand the test of time. With Article's 30-day satisfaction guarantee, you can shop with confidence, knowing that if you're not completely in love with your new furniture, you can easily return it. Article's offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/hysteria, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/hysteria for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for caftans. Speaking of modesty, I just want to say one thing real quick. I was watching the season premiere of Love Island USA last night.
Okay.
After doing all this research about modesty, right? Which is like funny because in Love Island USA, they're just wearing like the smallest.
They're naked. Yeah.
They're basically naked the whole time. And I was watching, you know, this is the first episode, so everybody's greeting each other and like everybody has such a beautiful body and they're all like so hot and comfortable and confident. And watching the way that the women, when they meet each other, are just like, you look incredible. You look stunning. Like they're so positive
right.
about the fact that they're just like uncovered and showing off their body and comfortable and happy. And I feel like there is a world where we can exist where Love Island USA and the positivity that the women show each other when they first meet each other, like a new bombshell has entered the villa and like
right.
freely talk about like, oh my gosh, she looks so great. And where it also should be acceptable for like a woman to just like roll around, like roll up to the beach in a caftan. She doesn't need to be like totally naked. You know, nobody's going to give anybody shit for
right.
choosing to cover up more. Well, is that too much to ask?
No, I mean, like, that's the, you know what the funny thing was that I don't know, because you know that for 10, 15 years, however long it's been, I have been a devotee of Sister Wives,
mm-hmm.
all Mormon, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes.
And their modesty, and I was like, when we were talking about the modesty, I was like, it brought me back to the first couple of seasons of that show. And the first couple of seasons, there was a lot of talk about modesty. And it was, everyone was, put a long sleeve shirt on under that short sleeve shirt. Don't wear that skirt. Like, there was a lot of that talk. And then the family gets run out of Utah by the government, and they move to Las Vegas. And everyone's like, Las Vegas, sin, it's going to be terrible. They all thrived in Las Vegas. Do you want to know why? They were accepted as who they were. People didn't care they were Mormon, didn't care that they were polygamous. Not Mormon so much, but the polygamy of it all. And all of the kids started to thrive and really kind of come into who they were. Then eventually they moved to Arizona, and mm-hmm. one of the neighbors is like, you are Mormon polygamist. I want to run you out of town.
Uh-huh.
And yes, Caroline, Coyote Pass ruined them all. And it was, but it's like, it was a very interesting, like the modesty as they were, like in the truest sense of like the modesty as part of their religion, which is why they dress that way.
Mm-hmm.
The more they were accepted, I don't know, the more they were accepted in the world beyond the church, sort of the more they became comfortable with themselves. And some of them dress modestly and some of them dress far less modestly, but they all love each other. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was, you know.
I think you're not going to quit until I watch that show, are you? You're just going to keep...
I'm not. It
you're
is
just
a
keep hammering at it.
Fascinating. Because their journey over all these seasons and how much they changed, I think, is a real interesting sociological profile.
Yeah. You know that my husband and I accidentally honeymooned in the same town as the Warren Jeffs compound.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah. Southern Utah,
they
Northern Arizona.
They hate Warren Jeffs.
There's a Southern Utah, Northern Arizona, and like Southern Nevada are like, it's like the Holy Trinity of places that polygamists like flee and run around and try to
it's
get
like
away.
Like St. George.
To evade the law. No, it was like Apple Valley, I think it was called. It's just like a complete... No, it was called Hilldale. Hilldale was what it was called. You know, here's something that I think for me is sort of like the litmus test of like modesty culture and what it when it is good versus when it's insidious. Mm-hmm. For me, the litmus test is like is this coming from a place of entitlement from people who aren't me? Like, does the world feel entitled to me not covering up as much as I want, right? Because if so, that sucks. If the world feels entitled to women dressing in shorter shorts and, like, shorter sleeves and they're entitled to see parts of their body, like, entitled to a woman wearing a bikini on the beach, the expectation that a woman will get, like, mostly naked when she's just trying to cool off in the summer. Like, that rubs me the wrong way and that's gross. Mm-hmm. But then there's also, like, an entitlement to demand that women cover up. And, like,
totally.
I think the entitlement from any kind of organization that is, like, that is treating women who don't cover up as something that, like, is violating something that they're entitled to. I think that that's, like, that's the kind of litmus test for me. But I do want to say, like, I want to kind of close this by talking about, like, the way that we were policed dressing up as kids. Like, were you ever told to put on more clothes? Or did you ever have an encounter? No, you're shaking your head, I figure.
No.
But did you ever have, like, did you ever have an encounter with somebody who was being chastised for not wearing enough clothing or not covering up enough, like a young woman?
I had a friend in high school who wore cutoff shorts, and I remember one of the aides saying that her shorts were too short.
And what did she have to do?
They just said, I think your shorts are too short, and she was kind of like, fuck off, and that was where it ended.
Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't sound like it was too bad.
No, I mean, that's the thing. I that wasn't much of a thing growing up.
Like, I always wanted to cover up more than what was the norm. Like, I always wanted to wear more clothes. Like, I was in kindergarten, we did a thing called the kindergarten circus. And of course, because I was the biggest yapper in my class, I was the ringmaster of the kindergarten circus. But the uniform that they gave me was like cut for a boy, because usually, like, I guess they just assumed that boys would be the yappers. But anyway, but it had a V that went down like this. And I spent the whole thing. There's like video of me holding my shirt closed the whole time, saying like all my lines. And I always was uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable wearing two-piece bathing suits, like even when I was a kid, and nobody had anything. And so everybody just ran around wearing like their little bikinis or whatever.
When I was in dance class, that is something I remember. When I was in dance class, you wear a leotard and tights. Mm-hmm. I always begged to let me put sweatpants on. I didn't like wearing a leotard and tights.
Yeah.
I like sweatpants or jazz pants, which were like the crinkly ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, jazz pants.
Right? And like, so as soon as I was older, for some reason, when you got to like seventh or eighth grade, you could sort of make that switch if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. And it was such a game changer. I did. I really hated walking around in tights and a leotard. I didn't like that.
Yeah. I remember wearing like for a dance in high school, I got like a spaghetti strap dress. Mm-hmm. And like it had like a little cleavage. And I remember being like, oh, like having to psych myself out of that, like, I had to get ready. Like, and I remember my mom being like, like, she didn't do anything, but I could tell that she was a little bit like, she knew that she shouldn't say anything to make me feel like bad. But I never got a like, you're not leaving the house in that. I never got.
Oh, no, never. Mostly because I dressed like Eddie Vedder in high school, so it wasn't really a problem.
This is a Mother Love Bone house. Do not respect Pearl Jam.
I had a men's medium flannel shirt, jeans, and Birkenstocks with socks on most of the time.
Sure,
so.
Sure.
My mom would have preferred if I was a little more form-fitting, probably.
For sure. I mean, whatever. I'm sure right now she's glad she doesn't have to worry about it. I think about the, like, you're not leaving the house in that situation, even though I never faced it, with, like, my two girls, because, like— Okay, so I've got two kids. One's three, one's almost one. The three-year-old likes to dress in boy clothes because boy clothes are, frankly, more comfortable and cover up a lot more of the body than girl clothes, even for fucking toddlers. Mm-hmm. It's really, really wild. I never quite realized how gendered clothing was for, like, little kids. Oh, hi, Kat.
He's a modest dresser.
Yes, he is a modest dresser. Oh, he looks like a bear.
He's a bear.
But anyway, before I was actually, like, shopping for kids, you know, baby clothes are sort of like they all cover about the same, whatever. Yeah. But then as you get into, like, 2, 3, 4, all of a sudden the boy clothes get bigger and the girl clothes get smaller. Like,
really?
The shorts that are available for girls are much shorter than the shorts that are available for boys. Mm-hmm. And it's like, kids that age are all, like, running around and doing pretty much the same activities anyway. Like, what function does having shorter shorts on girls serve? You know, like,
right.
Why are there so many spaghetti strap options for little kids? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but why are they only for girls? Like, there aren't spaghetti strap, like, boy tank tops, you know? And, like, it's very strange. And there's a part of me that's like, I totally get why my 3-year-old like, only wants to wear, like, sweatpants and, like, mm-hmm. T-shirts every day. She doesn't like dresses. She doesn't like skirts. She doesn't like little short shorts.
Right.
But I wonder if there's going to be a time when, like, you know, she wants to leave the house and it's like, when do I say, like, your body is too distracting? Like, whether or not you're trying to get a reaction, I do not approve of the reaction you're going to get. Yeah. And I think about it a lot. Believe it or not, it keeps me up.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. What would you do? Like, can I have them? Can I FaceTime you?
Yeah, of course. I'll be like, okay, let's just, you know what my thing is? It's like the outfit that you're going out in, or the whatever you're going out to, is the outfit functional?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So my niece, tomboyish. Because she's always going out to the park. She plays hard, you know? She plays soccer. She plays sports. So she's always got, like, flexible, comfy clothes on, right? If you mm-hmm. fall down, you want something covering so you don't skin your knee. But as they get older, I guess it's mostly like, I don't know, can you sit down and not bear everything? I mean, that's, like, one litmus test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, are you comfortable? Are you going to burn your butt on the slide?
Right.
Right?
Are you going to burn your butt? Are you going to have to peel your legs off of a non-fabric seat?
I mean, I also think, like, and this is going to sound strange, but, like, in an era of climate change, that having revealing clothing for children is not something that makes sense at all.
No, you need the UV protective clothing and, you know.
Yeah. Like, you need your, like, when we go swimming, like, I go to the store and they have, like, bathing suits available for children that show off, for babies, that show off, like, all of their skin. And it's like, what is this for? Like, where are we wearing? Are we all going to indoor pools? Like, where are
gross.
We? Where are we wearing this? Like, there's, like, if we're wearing it out, like, it just doesn't make any sense. And it's this weird, like, stubborn adherence to this gendered idea that women wear less when they go out in public than men. And
yeah.
I don't love that. In that way, I'm sort of like on the side of modesty in that it will introduce maybe an intentionality to how much we're showing. Like, do I need to be showing off this much? Because will I be more comfortable or will, like, I feel happier if I do it?
It's like we're in favor of a permission structure for modesty. Like, if you want to dress modest, then there is support for that. Do you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dark paranoia about this whole thing is that it's leading to some sort of situation where modesty is expected and women who don't choose to dress modestly will be punished, which, you know, makes me pretty anxious.
Well, we can't take anyone at their word these days.
We really can't take anyone at their word these days. Not at all. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Shopify. Alyssa.
Yes.
Alyssa and I, as our listeners know, we launched a business where we make screaming pillows. Those are pillows that are not designed to be slept on, only screamed into. Well,
yes.
We have heard you loud and clear, listeners.
You love the pillow.
You love the pillow, But you're like, I want one that travels with me. So introducing the travel screaming pillow. We have an airplane screaming pillow, which is great for airport frustrations. Yeah. Great for screaming into. Fits around your neck.
Yeah, has a little belt, a little buckle so that you don't lose it.
A little, it comes in several colors. But here's the thing. We need to get that information out to our customers, our loyal, devoted customers of the regular-ass home screaming pillow, the car screaming pillow, the airplane screaming pillow, and maybe even the train screaming pillow.
Don't forget the bathroom screaming pillow.
The bathroom screaming pillow. We need to make sure that our website is easy to navigate so our customers can find our tried and true bestseller product and also be introduced to these new products that we are really excited about.
We love Shopify.
That's why we use Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started, like our imaginary screaming pillow company.
The screaming pillow. Get started with your own design studio. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store to match your brand style. Accelerate your content creation. Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. Get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. Easily create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling. And best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. If you're ready to sell, you're ready to Shopify.
Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/hysteria. Go to shopify.com/hysteria. Shopify.com/hysteria. And welcome back. You are listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who have been waiting all year for the content that is dropping this week or recently, right?
Yes.
And just like that, Love Island USA. What other dumb stuff can I feed into my brain hole to make
this is our time of year. I mean, things are coming. It's summer. Things are coming back. We're getting it in just like that. Once a week from now until the end of the summer. Mm-hmm. The Summer I Turned Pretty, which is actually quality programming, comes back in a couple weeks. I can't wait to see who Belly marries.
Before we get to Sandy Petty, though, some announcements for the class. Alyssa, take it away.
Erin, what is stagflation anyway? On the newest episode of Inside 2025, I sat down with Cecilia Rouse, economist, Princeton professor, and former chair of Biden's Council of Economic Advisors, for a conversation that's basically Econ 101 without the pop quiz. We break down the big questions. How worried should we be about the national debt? What are tariffs actually for? And what kind of long-term consequences could today's economic policies create? If you've ever pretended to understand the economy at brunch, this one's for you. Here's a quick clip from a professional, Cece. Is there anything about this moment in our economy that you wish more lay people like me understood that could help them make better long-term financial decisions?
Oh, well, how much time do we have?
It's your floor. Please take up all the time.
Look, in terms of personal finances right now, it's choppy, it's tough, it's uncertain. And for those who can make longer term decisions, my advice would be don't look. Just wait it out. You know, the stock market has gone up, it's gone down, it's bouncing around. And one thing we do know is it's, with all due respect to the taco traders, it's very hard to time the market. And so for most people, just not paying attention to the day-to-day volatility in their portfolios or in their assets, I think is the game. That said, this administration is rechanging norms of all kinds. We are going to have a different role in the world in terms of our trading partners. And I think we are going to have to go back to figuring out how do we, you know, maintain our strong labor market. We have to ensure that we probably do need to be doing more manufacturing in the United States. I actually agree with some of that goal of producing more domestically. I don't believe in completely closing off our borders, but especially for national security reasons, which has been abused at times, but we learned through the pandemic that sometimes we do have to close we get those shipping lanes get closed off for whatever reason, and there are critical needs that we have. So I think we understand that. And so I think it is continue to invest, trying to invest in yourself. I still believe education is a good investment for younger people. Learning, recognizing that the labor market's changing, though, even with artificial intelligence. So learning to have, you know, general skills and critical thinking skills and trying to really invest in yourself and to be creative. Learning the trades. We're going to need tradespeople, and we continue to need tradespeople. And as I said, on the asset side, you know, hold your breath and just don't look.
Listen to Inside 2025 now and get access to even more exclusive content, including Erin on Terminally Online this Saturday. Just subscribe at crooked.com/friends.
Okay, listeners, did you know that we have a bunch of exclusive content only on YouTube?
Like our show on YouTube called This Fucking Guy, where we put hours of watching disturbing true crime to good use and dig into the corrupt and horrible past of the worst people you've ever heard of.
The newest episode is out and it's on Leonard Leo, the man who fucked up the American judiciary system and has basically, he's the one responsible for all of the shit.
All of the shit. Also the person Donald Trump is calling the absolute worst right now.
I love that. I love that the girls are fighting. I love the Elon drama. I love the Leonard Leo drama. You can find it all on the Hysteria YouTube channel. We also have an Elon Musk episode, which a lot of people have enjoyed. Just search Hysteria on your nearest YouTube search bar. Okay, let's get to Sani Petty. Alyssa, I'm going to go first because I just kind of was building the plane as I was flying it. And I realized, like, what's my sanity quarter this week? And this is a classic Sani Petty. This is something I feel very petty about, but it makes me feel very, it's like a petty thing that makes me happy. Nancy Mace, Congresswoman from South Carolina. We don't like to pay attention to her because her whole thing seems to be trying to get attention.
She's chaos.
She seems, frankly, unhinged. Like, not well. She seems like there is something wrong with her. Like, not in a, like, you know, there's some people you're like, this person sucks. This senator sucks. This congressperson sucks. Nancy Mace seems like there is something wrong with her.
Is she like pathologically pick me?
She's a pathological pick me, right? So the latest thing that just came out was a few years ago, Nancy Mace was sending out like very supportive tweets about Pride Month. And then fast forward to this year, and she went on like this really bizarre one woman crusade about like bathrooms in the Capitol. And it was all this kind of like really weird attempt to get Donald Trump's attention. And he seems to only sort of be paying attention to her. And it's very strange. And then there was also the incident of a few years ago where she said Antifa. Antifa vandalized her house, she says.
Oh, yeah, right.
The vandalism had the same handwriting as her. I'm not going to conclude anything, but it made it, the vandalism
sus
was very sus, and there hasn't been that much more talk about the alleged vandalism. It was also in parts of her house that could be easily spray washed, which, as of, if I were to vandalize something, I would pick parts of the house that were not easily spray washed. But that's just me because I'm an efficient vandal, if I were to be a vandal. But the thing that made me feel both petty and Sani is that there is a report in Wired on Wired.com that reports that Nancy Mace has gone around telling her staff for like years and years that she's a computer coder. She's like a big time like computer nerd and a coder. And nobody has ever really seen her code. But she also makes her staff, according to this report, make sock puppet accounts and go online and support Nancy Mace and get on, like, get in fights in the comments and pretend to be like Nancy Mace fans. Like, that was some of her staff's job was to go online. Also, according to this article in Wired, that she fashioned an army of bots and some like artificial engagement to make her seem more popular and interesting than she actually is.
Oh, wow.
Which is very, very funny to me. And it's like, given what I already think about Nancy Mace, given the publicly available information, she also earlier this year went on the floor of Congress and like accused her ex-boyfriend of like really awful things, like sexual abuse and spying on her and like all of this stuff. And she didn't get in trouble because No. People in Congress cannot get in trouble for saying whatever they want on the floor of Congress. She's immune from, like, slander and libel. But also because it's on the floor of Congress, it got broadcast everywhere.
Everywhere.
So this person, whether or not they did the thing that she said that they did, has no recourse. If it, even if it's provably false and provably slanderous, he has no recourse. So she seems like – anyway, so given what I know about her – her going around and being like, I'm a computer programmer, self-taught, and then, like, not being good at programming computers, but actually being okay at, like, making botnets to support her and, like, hiring, making her staff pretend to, like, be her fans on Twitter.
Is, she's
like,
so sad.
It's so sad. I sent this to a friend of mine who was, like, connected to the Congress, and she was like, what a loser. And it was like,
I mean, truly, like that is such, that is losery behavior.
Loser behavior. Like, it's just, it's just, I think that Nancy Mace is the member of Congress out of all of them who I would, she'd be in my, like, top five members of Congress that I would refuse to be alone in a car with, you know?
Because you could not trust anything that would happen before, during, or after.
She's got steering wheel grabbing energy.
She does.
She's got something very, like, all of the time she's in the news, I'm like, that lady, something's not right.
She is off.
She's off. Indeed. So that's what's making me feel sanny and petty this week, is this news story that's like, I knew it.
You knew it. Every news story that comes out about her is an I knew it.
You're like, I fucking knew it.
And there she goes again.
I hope the people of South Carolina next election cycle make a better decision, because how embarrassing for you.
She is one of the biggest embarrassments.
She is really embarrassing. Okay. Alyssa, what is keeping you sane or making you feel petty this week?
So mine is a sanny and a petty.
Okay.
Erin and Just Like That is back.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So much to talk about.
Okay.
One, do I need some frothy, fun fashion in my life every week? I do.
Yes.
I really do.
Yes.
It's lovely. The cityscapes of New York. I'm here for it. I love it. But I swear to God, I just had a couple threshold issues about the first one.
Okay.
First, I was like, okay, tonight's episode, first, HBO better drop two episodes. They didn't. They only did one. And I'm like, this episode better leave. I was with my friend Lindsay, who listens to us every week. And I was like, Linz, we saw each other. We were together on Thursday. I was like, you know what's on tonight? She's like, and Just Like That. And we were both like, there better be two episodes, and it better be at least 54 minutes.
No.
It was like 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. The minute it started, I was like, what? And some of that was like recap. And, you know, do I miss Che Diaz? I kind of miss Che Diaz in their comedy concerts. You know, I'm missing the Che energy. Mm-hmm. The fashion was almost too over the top. I mean, I think Carrie had something that could be a cross between a pillowcase, a kite, and something from Willy Wonka on in the park, that brown and white striped thing that she was wearing on her head.
Oh my God. It was hot. It to me, it was giving a strawberry shortcake.
It was strawberry shortcake. It almost looked like she was going to a costume party and she was dressing as the wagon that the Ingalls rode into Walnut Grove on. You know? Like, I was like, what is – I'm like, oh, my God, that look – that's crazy.
Yeah.
So that was crazy.
It was like a gingham chef hat.
It was a bridge too far.
Yeah.
It was a bridge too far. You and I both had a text laugh over Charlotte's Chanel dog park outfit, which was, I mean, that's a point of conspicuous consumption. If you're just wearing Chanel's to the dog park.
Right.
A Chanel that would never be sold at the flagship in New York City.
See, it was like one of those Chanel outfits that I'm like, oh, this was made for like rich Chinese ladies. Like rich middle-aged Chinese ladies. This is not like a New Yorker. This is
who
not
are at the casino.
Like, yeah. This is like high roller or high roller wife at the casino.
Yeah.
Like it was just not like there. Yeah, that was a weird outfit.
And then our favorite, our favorite Lisa, who is, I think her name is Lisa, who is the documentary filmmaker. She is the chicest. She is the most beautiful on the show. And she wore an Airbnb accessory around her neck. These straw rattan balls around her neck that not only did she wear to her pitch, but she somehow got the apron up over her neck around the necklace.
It was like the necklace was being worn atop the apron. It was like decorative.
She had to have had rashes under her. Like, it was so physically uncomfortable looking. That said,
the actress, Nicole Ari Parker is her name.
She's beautiful.
She's absolutely gorgeous. But I think that she should win some kind of award for acting through that. Like, it was like, the whole time, like, she's got one of the most beautiful faces on television. But, like, I could not, my eyes kept going to
her neck.
Ball necklace.
It was a ball necklace. Silly. It was so strange. But did I love every minute of it? I did. Am I counting down tomorrow night? I am. I hope there are 10 more seasons. But I do need just we're not even going to talk about the Aiden scene because that was appalling. Yeah. That was a no. I hope there's no more of that for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But give me Carrie's house. I love her kitchen. Give me more of her kitchen. Mm-hmm. Give me Shoo the Cat. I'm here. I'm in it. They can do nothing to drive me away.
I fear that it was foreshadowed in the last episode, in the first episode of the season, when her alarm kept saying the kitchen door was open.
Yeah.
I am afraid that this time, the final scene of this episode, the first episode, yes, she shuts Shoo the Cat out of her room so she can have sex with Aiden, but Aiden is not available for phone sex. And then she hears kitchen door open. I think Shoo the Cat got out. I think that's going to be a whole thing.
I have a take.
Okay.
I think Aiden sneaks in through the back door. I mean, the kitchen door.
Yeah, but he's in bed with his...
No, like in a coming episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe
Carrie
stands her ground.
Yes. Do you think Carrie has a gun now that she lives alone?
I don't know.
In a house?
Who do you think of the cast of And Just Like That, who do you think is most likely to have a gun?
Miranda.
Ugh. Then she'd do something dumb. Like, because this iteration of Miranda is so, like, disappointingly, like, except in this episode she was confident because
she was a little mean
rejecting Rosie
to the tourist nun.
I think, like, I don't know, maybe we'll get confident Miranda back. Kristen Davis, her only plot line in this episode was like
the dog park.
Somebody thinks my dog is mean. My dog's not mean. See, I told you my dog's not mean. And it's like,
you know what? We followed the journey all the way through.
You know what? I could have used Che. I miss Che.
Give me some Che. I miss Che. You know what I don't miss, though? I don't miss the podcast storyline.
Yeah.
I always felt like that was filler flower of the episode. So I'm glad that's done.
Yeah, I am glad that's done. I am also, gosh, you know what? I'm watching the show and I'm like, this is not a good show.
Some of the
scenes are very tightly written and they like wrap up in a bow really nicely. But what made it work in the original Sex and the City was like the performances. And I think Sarah Jessica Parker has the chops. Mm-hmm. Every scene she's in, even if like something falls a little flat or I'm like the situation is silly, I'm like, that's okay. SJP is pulling this off, right? But she is best actor in the cast. Like, she's the funniest. She's the one pulling it off. I really just miss Kim Cattrall. I really, really miss her. I think
I love every minute of it. And let me tell you, you know what I love the most? Mm-hmm. I love that HBO fundamentally understands that in order to watch The Mountainhead, I need Just Like That.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't watched that yet, but I'm really excited.
Oh, you should watch it. But don't watch it before bed.
Okay. Yeah, no, you told me that. Okay, well, here's to And Just Like That. And I'm also excited for more Love Island USA. I got to say, last summer—
I got to start it.
Yeah, last summer when the vibes were terrible, like after I gave birth like on Father's Day last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the debate was like a week later. I turned it on for 2 minutes in the middle of his abortion answer. And then I was like, and off. And then that whole summer, my mental health was sustained by Love Island USA content. And so There's like a, I have like a nostalgic relationship with the show because it's like the vibes are bad again, man. And like,
no, the vibes are bad again. I have that same relationship with Sister Wives. That's why I love it so much.
Yeah.
It sustains me through dark times.
It's not like I'm not going to tune out, but like we can't all be like dialed in all the time.
No.
Because like it's like when you're at Subway, right? And you watch them make your sandwich and they're making it bad. And you're like, I'm just not going to watch
it. It's going to taste the same.
Yeah.
Just look away.
It's the same. Just look away. There are moments when you just got to look away from them making the Subway sandwich all fucked up. All right. On that very dumb joke, we're going to wrap up this week's episode. That's all the time we have. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you so much for being my ride or die this week and every week. Listeners, we love you so much. If you want to hang out with us virtually, we are on the Discord, which is available to friends of the pod. So if you want to, we jump in there and we chitter chatter from time to time. And there's some really interesting conversations, and the other people in the community are really great and fun and cool. Mm-hmm. And I think you would enjoy being a part of that. You can also reach out to us at hysteria@crooked.com. That's our email address. A bunch of us check it, so don't get too personal, but we love hearing from you. We love tips. We love corrections if they're worded nicely. We love thoughts. We love anything that you guys want to say to us. We love hearing from you. Listeners, there will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.